What's something that you'd like people to know about autism?
Okay. Well, autism, the month of April is Autism Awareness Month. And a lot of, and this is world known, nationally known, autism awareness. And the shift that's happening is that we are looking at Autism Acceptance Month. We've been aware for a while. 1 in 36 children are now diagnosed with autism. And about 28% of those children are profoundly impacted by their disability. So the numbers are rising. 10 years ago, it was 1 in 59. So pretty exponentially. And the severity of the spectrum, because it is a spectrum. Some people are the Rain Man. You know, a lot of people say, oh, the Rain Man, or Albert Einstein, Steve Jobs. Some are.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of American Potential. We talk a lot about education, and not every child is the same. And that's what we're going to be talking a little bit about today. You know, learning that your child has a disability starts parents on a journey of understanding and adjusting. Parents have to learn about their child's unique needs and find the best way to support them. Through therapies and adjustments at home, these children require an extra layer of care to navigate through each day. And as parents settle into this new role, it can be demanding because there's so much to learn, and they try to discover what truly benefits their child's needs. Unfortunately, this journey can also be isolating for some, because many people don't understand the challenges and may distance themselves from the family. Now, one way states are supporting families with disabilities is by offering vocational training, therapies, and other services. One state just passed a bill that would help families get services quicker during an emergency. Our guest today is a mom of four and has been on this journey because both of her twins have autism. After one of them had an accident that sent him to the hospital, and through her experience of it taking almost a year for her son to get services, she realized something needed to change when it came to emergency situations. I want to welcome Stephanie Norden, who is the founder of Autism Collier, to the podcast to talk about her sons and why she worked on this bill. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, now, first of all, I have to ask you about this. It says here that you study mycology. Now, I don't know that I've ever met anybody who studies mycology. What made you decide? Well, first of all, tell our listeners what mycology is, and what made you decide to study? Is it fungus, fungi?
Fungi, fungus, mushrooms. Mycology is the study of mushrooms. And I stumbled into mycology in 2018, trying to learn how to meditate. I couldn't figure it out. And I had a friend of mine who was a mycologist and said, hey, let's go out into the woods. I'll show you a few things. And we tripped over mushrooms I would have never even known were there that had incredible medicinal components to it. And it's like a treasure hunt. It's something for me to do, to just look down at the ground, see what I see, split it open, take a spore print, go in my identification book and see what kind of mushroom I found.
Now, there's some that are excellent to eat and others that are very deadly and dangerous, right? So you got to know what you're doing.
Yes. You never eat a mushroom that you don't know where it's at. And I actually, most of the mushrooms I find, we live in a sandy, beachy area. It's a whole lot to clean the edible mushrooms. I really just go there and play scientist.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Now let's talk about your twins and what the journey's been like learning about their autism.
Okay. Well, I have 14-year-old twin boys, Logan and Gavin, and they were diagnosed right at 14 months. They were really young, especially at that time, and profoundly autistic. So the boys and I have had more or less every adventure you could come up with. They are nonverbal in today's measures. They do the autism scale 1 to 3. If you have level 1 autism, you can get around life for the most part, needing very little support. And then all the way to the flip side of 3, where you continually need support 24 hours a day. And my boys are on the 3 end. And we have really learned how to speak to each other without words. And that, I think, is one of the best gifts that they've taught me. The boys are incredible human beings. And I'm a mom of 4 boys. So I have 2 14-year-olds, a 13-year-old, and an 11-year-old. And I want all of my boys to have a happy, independent life. And yeah, with the twins, it takes a lot of extra steps to make that possible, which is a lot of the inspiration behind Senate Bill 1758. Is they need supports. They'll need long-term care supports. And that is what that bill is regarding.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as parents, you kind of learn these things as you go along. I remember my son is juvenile diabetic, and he was diagnosed when he was 8 years old. And I didn't know what that meant. I remember the first time I heard it, I thought, well, that means he's going to die very soon, I guess. I just didn't know. And of course, I found out later that afternoon that you can live with it. And it's just something you manage and you have to deal with. And there's, you know, that's a tragedy. It's a disappointment when you find things out like that. But it is also something that brings great challenges, but it also brings great blessings in life. I'm sure that you found that with your boys as well.
Absolutely. I was really fortunate. I don't hear this story very often, and I talk to a lot of families with autism, but my best girlfriend moved in with me when the boys were about 6 months, and she had a boy that was 12 days older than the twins, and she also is a 25-year veteran pediatric nurse. So we knew she very graciously, lovingly, as a friend, she didn't collect a copay, taught me about autism and led me down the path of acceptance way before I would have if I would have gone to a doctor. And I think that helped us a whole lot, just move into solution mode.
Yeah. Well, talk about what it's like. I mean, for someone who doesn't know anyone who's autistic and certainly maybe doesn't raise kids who are autistic, what's it like raising autistic sons?
Well, it's a newborn hour sleep schedule. Still to this day, we're about 3 to 4 hours with each boy alternating. And Logan and Gavin had a very difficult time adjusting to sounds, lights, people, noises, until they were about 3. Eye contact. They couldn't even make eye contact without screaming. The only thing as little small babies that helped them was running water and classical music. And it felt like hell. I mean, I felt trapped. And I saw these little boys feel trapped. And it was very, very difficult. And I kept trying to Google my way through the diagnosis, and I could solve it if I just found one more article. And as time has gone on, Logan and Gavin have taught me the importance of acceptance and living in the day. And we take every day with strides. They still need help feeding, bathing, dressing. They don't speak. They're nonverbal. So communication is challenging. And if you weren't able to speak what you were thinking or needing, it would be really frustrating. And that is what happens a lot with the boys. And a lot of times when people see children or adults with autism banging their head or like flapping their arms a lot, rocking back and forth, that's a frustration from not being able to communicate your needs. And so we now have kind of a system where I can tell by how Gavin runs out of his room, what that need is. We've just learned each other so well. And I do have in-home supports. I'm one mom with four kids, and two of them are more than my fingers can hold. So we do have in-home respite services so mom can go to work. And we have personal care assistants so that they have someone with them at all times to keep them safe.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So talk, what happened to get you involved, you know, in I guess, active, I guess you'd say politically, but what happened?
Oh, well, okay. What happened was 2020 for me. So back in 2020, I decided that it was really important for me to understand who I would go to if I was concerned on what rules were being told to me. I needed to know the laws of the land, and I didn't. So I got involved politically back in 2020, and had no ambitions of going into disability services. I was really overwhelmed just being mom, and I was afraid it would take me under. And then in February of 2022, my son Logan fell out of his second story private school window, fell about 20 feet. And I got there, I got to the school right at the time of the accident, which, you know, in retrospect is a godsend, and was able to hop on a helivac to go to Tampa General Trauma Hospital, where they treated Logan for 5 skull fractures, 5 spinal fractures. Both of his arms' bones were like sticking out of the arm. So they call those compound fractures. Both arms, both legs, ribs. He had fluid in his lungs, blood on his brain, swelling on his brain. He wasn't supposed to live by medical standards. And about 2 days of being into the hospital with my son on a ventilator, I got a phone call from the school, and they had discharged my other son, Gavin. And that is when one crisis was going to spiral into 50 if I didn't figure something out quick. So I, each state has a home and community-based service waiver. And I contacted our state agency to say, hey, I'm in crisis. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I need help. And that turned into something else. In the state of Florida, if you are in crisis, you're at the highest priority level, meaning there is no wait list for you. In Florida, we have about 35,000 families on the home and community base service waiver, also known as the med waiver, 35,000 on it and 23,000 waiting, with about 40% of them waiting over 10 years. So crisis is the top of the line. And that didn't happen right away. It actually took over a year. It was 385 days before services came into the home. Logan was going to die. And then all of a sudden he healed, and he healed like miraculously quick. And we were sent home from the hospital 45 days later with no supports. And that year plus 15 days or whatever, 25 days, it was the hardest time of my life. And I spent a lot of it thinking, and thought of ways where really it would take a little bit of common sense to help families get better access to service. And about halfway through the waiting period, I contacted my local legislator. I went to our legislative delegation meeting. I was exhausted. I hadn't slept, and said, hey, I've tried this, I've tried that, and it's not working. My children don't have services. I don't know what to do. And I do have some ideas on how to fix this. Can we do this? And to my surprise, because I had never really engaged before, I had no idea how this worked. My representative called and said, let's make an appointment. She brought me into her office, And this is where like things really changed in the best of ways. I didn't sit down with some fancy politician. I sat down with another mom who didn't know what I was talking about. She was very honest and transparent with me. And she said, you know, it's interesting timing because I just got placed on a committee that oversees the state agency. And I spent 3 hours on the phone learning these acronyms, but you're speaking over my head. So how about you educate me and I'll help you? And we had a beautiful relationship. Her office and also our local senator's office contacted the state agency for 4 more months. And then we got services and it got turned on. And she told that representative told me, now, listen, next legislative session, meaning 2024, why don't you come back and we'll talk about the suggestions that you have. And that's exactly what happened. It's pretty incredible to see our system do what our system's supposed to do. And I'm going to just keep going here. So that was a fabulous experience. And then in August of this year, I had met some folks when I went to Tallahassee. I went to Tallahassee the first year and walked around like a crazy person and was like, here's my 1 minute elevator speech on why we should improve services for our crisis people.
By the way, how far is Tallahassee from where you live?
8 hours.
8 hours. Okay. So not an easy.
No, I have. Yeah, I have about a 24 hour window before I have to go turn back home. So I went on a mission and I got it done. And one of the women that I met up in Tallahassee sent me an email back in August of 2023. And she said, you know, there's some changes happening for our services for folks with disabilities that's really concerning. And I think we should gather families around and have them go meet with their legislators. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Yes, because at this point I had had services for like 5 months and already had a million other things to suggest for improvements. And so we came. Collier County, Florida, is just so happens to be where our Senate president was. And so that was her strategy. The president is in your neck of the woods. Let's gather families there first. So we had a meeting. There was about 10 parents. And at the end of the meeting, I noticed that look that a lot of special needs parents get, including myself, when information is too much, too fast, too soon. They just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is how I spent my hour. I have so many things to do. And so I just asked real quick, like, how many of you guys have met with a legislator ever? How many of you know what a legislator does? And only one of the parents knew. And so that's when I realized that, oh, we get to do this all together and learn it together. A friend of mine and I started a Zoom call. If families want to gather and learn how to meet with your legislator so that we can make positive legislative change, hop on our Friday Zoom call. And very quickly, families came pouring out. We had 80 delegation meetings in the state of Florida this past session, and our families were at 78 of 80. And those legislative delegation meetings are in each county. We have 67 counties in the state of Florida. So we had families coming out and not only going to these public hearings, but also making appointments with their legislators and making relationships so that they, and the purpose was, is like, you've got to see that we're human. We're not a number. We're not a budget. These are human beings that aren't getting their needs met, and we need your help. And so that's what we did. And it was the most empowering thing I could have ever experienced. Developmental Disability Awareness Day in the Capitol was February 7th of this year, which is the 2-year anniversary of Logan's accident. And never in a million years did I think I would be sitting in a Senate sitting with the Senate president recognizing me and my friends for drafting this bill. And the state of Florida gave like historically record amounts of priority to our families with disabilities. And our incoming House Speaker is a sibling. He's a brother, and he's talked about it, that that is a priority. We're going to continue to help those who can't help themselves. So that's my experience in political world. It's been wonderful.
So you talked about never in a million years would you have imagined that you'd be in that position. Talk about that journey. I mean, there must have been times where you thought you were probably overwhelmed. Like, I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure there were other times when you kind of were surprised at how successful you were. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. I actually spent, there were times I was overwhelmed, without a doubt. However, there was a strange piece that happened within me when I couldn't fix my son, Logan, for those 45 days. And I had to just trust God and trust that these doctors knew what they were doing. And I really, it's cheesy, but I learned that power of letting go and then taking control of what is mine and running with it. I have spent the last 2 years, I have felt more empowerment, more hope, more peace than I had way before the accident. It's just different now. I think that helping these other families and seeing them feel the way that I felt for so long, because you had mentioned in the beginning about isolation. Mm-hmm. I think the hardest part for me the past 14 years was Logan and Gavin were never invited to a play date. Eli and Titus, they don't get opportunities to play with their friends because of Logan and Gavin. Some of our family members are uncomfortable around the boys. If we go to the grocery store, people are rude. I mean, I could go to a park and someone will tell me, I've heard it a million times, you know, well, what I did was just get the paddle out, set them right straight. Like, all of the time, strangers will come up to you and give you unsolicited advice. And not many people ask you how you're doing. And meeting families all over in all sorts of different stages of life, different disabilities, have that same common denominator of, oh man, it's lonely over here. And being able to support them has done so much more than anything I could have ever imagined. So yes, I feel overwhelmed, but not like I used to when I was alone.
Did you, it sounds like you also built kind of a network of support, right? I mean, you now have other parents who are going through kind of the same challenges maybe that you are. That has that been a benefit of this as well?
I'd say that's like the second best benefit, you know, getting my boys what they need. That's going to be number one always. But having a group of people who understand what you're going through and you understand what they're going through and you guys could talk freely is the most incredible feeling for our families. It's great that we made such positive change, but honestly, the relationships that we've formed are, I believe, lifelong.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about the bill that was passed. What did the bill do?
Okay, so the bill had several parts in it, and we actually partnered with our state agency on this bill. So some parts are ours and some parts are theirs, which is fabulous because I'm all about collaboration. I think that's the key. So the first part of the bill is that the application be made available online. I was in an ICU unit asking very, very busy hospital staff if I could borrow their fax one more time just to send this application. And it's 2024. So,
And no one else uses fax machines except
nobody does. And paperwork gets lost in the system a lot with families when they apply. So this electronic, it'll have electronic verification. So if you are missing something, the agency needs to let you know and confirm receipt. So that's one part that I added. And then the second part that I added is right now, currently, in the state. Well, actually, no, it passed. Never mind. Last year, if somebody was in crisis, the APD had 45 days to determine the eligibility of somebody in crisis. So like, imagine your house is on fire and you call 911 and they'll say, hey, in 45 days, we'll think about sending an ambulance. And so that got changed to 15 days. And then one of the biggest things that changed is the aging caregiver age in the state of Florida was 70. And that's a priority list. People are on a wait list. And when their parents turn 70, then they can move up on the wait list. And so that got changed down to 60. And that was influenced by one of our families whose son had been on the wait list for 17 years. And he's full care. And mom is aging, but not quite 70. I think she had 2 or 3 more years. And so making that 60 will alleviate so many people off of the wait list. And then another interesting part that came out later was a sibling. If you have a sibling that's on the waiting list and you get through, then that sibling gets moved up into priority. And that for those of us that have more than one, it's really important to get everybody help. And then they put about 39 million. Yeah, 39 million to an appropriation on this bill to alleviate more people from categories 3, 4, and 5, which is just people on a waiting list. There were about 6 bills that were good bills that had a direct result from our families. And about 1,600 people plus 900, they've got a pilot program, are going to be removed off the wait list. Now, in the scope of 22,000 people waiting, we're not there yet. But that is more than we've done. The governor put us in his budget. The Senate president really fell in love with one of our self-advocates in particular, J.J. Holmes. This guy is one of one. He's bright and funny, and he captured our Senate president. And so she put that in her main legislative priority this session. I mean, our bill was one of the first ones to be signed by the governor. I was concerned. We like flew through both houses. And what I really loved was listening to all these legislators say over and over again, these families have reinvigorated our why we got into this. Why are we doing this? And that is exactly what we wanted them to see. Like, this is your why. These are the families that need you the most, and you can really help. And they did.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, what was it like working with lawmakers? You kind of described that. Did you, as you went through it, was the expectation at the beginning different than what reality turned out to be? I mean, since you'd never done this before, you probably had an expectation of what it might be like working with lawmakers. How did that match up to reality?
You know, it's interesting. I went into it for my first appointment and it was like amazing. She wanted to learn from me. I needed to learn from her. We had this cohesive yeah thing going off from the start. And then I met all of these families who have been doing this for a very long time, 30, 40 years. And heard about the other side of how this could go and how our families have been treated. So I went into meetings not sure how it was going to go. And I would say overall, it went really fabulous. Having the Senate president and the incoming House speaker very boldly say this is a priority of ours helped back us up. But also, One of the things I do in other local areas of government, I just started speaking with legislators, but I've been talking to my school board, my county, my city for about 4 years. And the spirit of collaboration wins every time. And so what I was trying to teach families was don't fluff things over, and speak your truth to where they can hear it. You got to speak past that anger and that emotion to get to the point, because we want them to change things. And that flipped the script for a lot of our families. You know, one of the most heartbreaking and then heartwarming things that happen are the majority of the families, the moms and dads that I met, they're in their 60s and 70s. I'm 39. So I'm a baby pup to them. And listening to them just say, I have no hope. We have done this and we have done that, and no one cares. No one cares about our people. And then to get involved into this and watch their hope be reinvigorated and their family's needs get met after so long of waiting. You know, when you walk alone without support, especially for your most treasured human beings, it does a lot of mental breakdown on the family unit as a whole. It just destroys who you are and how your marriage is and how your relationships with your families are. And by having these supports, these families, me, everyone, we have an opportunity to be like everyone else. And that's all we want.
Yeah. Yeah. Every human being has intrinsic value.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it takes you to be able to find that community to understand that value. And it sounds like that's really been one of the great benefits. You said it was the second most important thing, right? Was that you built this community. Talk about what it's been like. You've talked a little bit about this, but what it's been like, and what the community now means to the families of these kids.
You know, one of the, this is another thing that was just kind of a surprise bonus, is our communities that we all live in around the state of Florida, like the people we shop with and work with and grocery, get gas with. It has been so wonderful to see them learn and want to learn more about how to help support families in whatever way. And the dynamic shift that's happened in just where I live has been the most beautiful thing. I'm in a bunch of civic groups, and they asked me to speak on this topic that nobody has talked about before. And I wasn't sure that was like a kosher thing. But the communities have embraced, and it's this wraparound effect that just keeps bubbling out and bubbling out. And to see families, you know, one of our families, I think this is one of my favorite stories. She had never met with a legislator, active in her town. She lives in like North Florida, like a small, small town. And her son actually got denied to be even on the wait list for the waiver. He was lighting fires in her kitchen at 2 a.m. He had drywall punched out from floor to ceiling and would escape out the doggy door every second he could. And the reason that they told this mom that he was denied is because he didn't go to jail or get Baker acted. And so this mom started coming on to our meetings, and she said, I think I'm going to go to my delegation meeting and tell my story. And that's exactly what she did. And her legislators took her story very seriously. And now her son has not only gotten onto the wait list, got off the wait list, is now on the waiver, is now receiving services, and is going to be placed in an intensive home, which is what he needs for a little bit. And this mom's life has changed. The color of her skin, her eye color, her husband, everybody looks a little bit healthier, and her son. And you know what? The coolest thing for me, I said my number one, is that despite what happened with Logan and Gavin over the last 2 years, the growth that has happened in the last year because they've had that intensive support system is unbelievable. Logan, for the first time, wrote to us. We have this like family communication board in our kitchen, you know, if we're out of ketchup. And he wrote on the board back in October, no school tomorrow. like spelled out perfectly. He didn't want to go to school. He's 13. Oh, he was 13. Makes sense. But he had never done that before. He had never, you know, and so it just shows that when you have what you need to work, the possibilities of what you can do and bring to the table are unbelievable. And that's the gift. That's what's so awesome about this.
Yeah. What's something that you'd like people to know about autism?
Okay. Well, autism, the month of April is Autism Awareness Month. And a lot of, and this is world known, nationally known, autism awareness. And the shift that's happening is that we are looking at Autism Acceptance Month. We've been aware for a while. 1 in 36 children are now diagnosed with autism. And about 28% of those children are profoundly impacted by their disability. So the numbers are rising. 10 years ago, it was 1 in 59. So pretty exponentially. And the severity and of the spectrum, like, because it is a spectrum. Some people are the Rain Man. You know, a lot of people say, oh, the Rain Man, or Albert Einstein, Steve Jobs. Some are in the middle. It's just a mix. And so if you know nothing about autism and you see somebody that looks like maybe they've got some autism, you know, smile at them, say hello, be kind, just like you would to anyone else. I think families and especially people with autism, they want to be like everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, What an amazing story. First of all, just about a mom's love. And I know a lot of moms and dads love, right? Who this group that you have, very dedicated parents who, you know, this is something that I think as a parent, you have to be very dedicated. And you give up probably much of your life, but to be dedicated to raise kids and give them value and worth and feel important in life. And so That's the first, I think, moral of this story. But the second is, and we talk about this all the time on this show, is, you know, to get involved. People are afraid to go do it because they don't know how. I mean, here you, I think, out of frustration and necessity, kind of stepped in and said, well, I've got to do this. I've got to go talk to legislators and you know, get the law changed. And you did it. And look how much better people's lives are in the state of Florida because you and other parents decided to do this. So thanks for sharing your story with us, Stephanie.
You're very welcome. And for anybody watching that may be afraid, if we can do it, we're not fancy, we're not special. Just go call up somebody and let them know who you are. You're their constituent. And it's just people. That's the coolest thing about this is we are just people.
If there's somebody watching this or listening, and they think to themselves, you know, I need to do this in my state. They don't live in Florida, and their state doesn't have this. How could they learn more about what you did?
Oh, absolutely. You can go to autismcollier.com, and we have a link to our advocacy section for grassroots advocacy. And we're doing an education series during the off-season of session this summer to do exactly that. If you don't know where to begin or what to do next, like, we're families here to support you. And I would love to see, hey, this is what we did. Go try it in your state. That would be incredible if this could go state to state to state.
Yeah, that sure would be. Well, listen, Stephanie, thank you for joining us, for telling us your story and the story of all the parents in Florida who got this law changed. And you know, I'm sure that you're rewarded every day by the love from your children, but it can't go without saying that that's a pretty special love that you have for your kids.
Yeah, they give it right back. So I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you, Stephanie. Well, listen, this is another example of how parents or average ordinary citizens get involved and they change the landscape. They don't just do it for themselves. They do it for everyone in their state, in their community, in their country. And you can do that too. And that's the power of citizen activism and getting involved. And so just another great example and a great story. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of American Potential. If you'd like to connect with us, you can contact me. Send me an email, jeff@americanpotential.com. And we're always looking for other stories to highlight on this show. The best way to stay connected is by liking and subscribing to our channel, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. If you know of a great story, if you know someone that's working on expanding freedom or opportunity that we should share, be sure to go to our website, AmericanPotential.com. Fill out the Share Our Story section with us. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.